The following seminar was recorded at the Worship God West 2014 conference and features Ryan Fogelsong. It's entitled Advanced Bass Guitar, Craft and Creativity.
Let's open up with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, Lord, thanks so much for this time that we get to be together as musicians and believers. What joy it is to come together and discuss music and those things that we're passionate about. But Father, more importantly, we're unified by your Son in your Holy Spirit, and that's what brings us joy, all excelling, Father. Pray that you'd give me clarity as I speak today, that you would allow for a time of lightheartedness and fun and engagement. And we pray all these things in your name. Amen. All right. So how many of you have been to a Worship God before? Oh, good. How many of you play bass? Good. How many of you play another instrument? Good. Any drummers in here? Oh, good. Good. I got a couple drummer jokes. Excellent. So for this bass seminar today, I was hoping that it could be super informal. I'm a teacher. I teach kids from 5 years old all the way up to 65. And so I really love the one-on-one. And if you have a question, it's probably going to be someone else's question too. So let's start out with a couple of drummer jokes. All right. So what's the difference between a savings bond and a drummer? A saving bond matures and makes money. Cool. So speaking of craft, by the very nature of a bass, it's one note at a time. So often harmony kind of gets lost by the wayside, right? And things like modes, scales, and things like that are really helpful to me as a bass player. It's how I get around the neck. And so hopefully today I'm going to take you step by step. We're going to talk about the triad and then how the pentatonic scale is related to the triad and then how modes are connected to the pentatonic scale. And hopefully we'll get somewhere fun by the end of today. So again, ask questions if you have them, and I'd be happy to answer them. So I've had the privilege of playing for the past, is it six Sovereign Grace albums? I think six. Yeah, so Sovereign, From Age to Age, Grace and Peace. We did a phenomenal Spanish album, Eros Dios. And then Mauricio Velarde just recorded another Spanish album that I got to record on. So it's been neat to watch kind of the relationship between myself and Sovereign Grace and guys like Will and David Zimmer and Enfield just kind of all partner in ministry together over the past couple years. It's been really neat. Started teaching, I'm 30 years old, and I started teaching bass at 19. And I was just telling someone that the Lord has been very gracious to me as he's been building me up as a musician. I was taking lessons from a bass teacher at a local music store, and I would have never thought I'd be a teacher at all. And he told me after taking 2 years of bass with him, I'm leaving to go back to Japan. I'm going to teach you how to teach because there's no one else here who can teach bass. So my journey as a teacher started out just by him sitting down with me, and over a period of 3 months, he gave me all of his students, gave me all of his materials. And that was the most nervous I've ever been, just sitting, you know, as a 19-year-old with, you know, a 55-year-old, you know, seasoned musician in front of me. I'm like, I have nothing to teach you. You probably could teach me some stuff. But the Lord's been very gracious in those little interactions and the way that he's brought me along. Up until 2 months ago, I taught music at an elementary school, which is, it's a blessing, but it requires a lot of patience. You have to figure out the way that kids learn. And we all know there's different types of learning, auditory, visual. Some kids see it better written down. Other kids see it better you playing it right in front of them. And then some of them are a combination of each of those. But I serve as a worship leader for college and high school at Grace Baptist Church in Santa Clarita, where Will here attends. And so it's fun being reunited with my buddy here and getting to play week in and week out with him. And then Enfield. We're playing tonight, and that's been an amazing privilege being part of that band because we kind of have a priority of bringing hymns back. And if you know anything about Enfield, a lot of you will associate kind of that name with just new hymns and hymns being rewritten. And so I love doing that. Do I have any questions right off the bat before we dive in? Great. Okay. So we're going to start out with the role of the bass player. What are the roles of the bass player? Rhythm. Good. What's another role? Root notes. Yes, first and foremost. Good. Anything else? To define the chord, right? That's kind of what the root is. That's why whenever we're done with a rehearsal and I sense there might have been a mistake or a chord disagreement, I'm always going up to Bob and say, okay, are we sure we're playing this one? Because if I'm defining the chord and someone else is playing something, we're going to get, you know, there'll be confusion in the harmony. So, and then to set the groove, that's kind of along the lines of rhythm. Whose responsibility is it to set the groove? Ben. Drums and the bass. Who else? Yes, everybody. That's exactly right. Ben's a student of mine. Thanks, Ben. Yeah, it's everyone's responsibility to groove. Obviously, the bass and the drummer are the meat and potatoes. We need to have that locked down. But every time Will's, you know, doing delay, he's making sure that delay is locked into our tempo. And so you could just as easily tell if something goes off the rails, if it's a guitar, bass, or drummer. So who would define groove? What's the definition of a groove? Anybody? Stuff? Yeah? Okay. Articulation? Okay, articulation may be time? Or notes? Or both? Both. Good. Anyone else? Yeah. Feeling the rhythm. That's great. So if it's in 4-4, adding spaces, absence of notes, and then adding notes, it all kind of coagulates into a rhythm. Good. I like this definition given by Norm Stockton, that groove is the consistent, reliable, and predictable forward motion of time moving forward in the music. It's the consistent, reliable, and predictable forward motion of time in the band. So everyone is responsible to care for that. Good. Well, I want to talk about root notes and just getting to know the neck of your bass. I found that as I was starting out, I knew where like two G's were. And no matter how far high I got on my neck, I'd always revert back down to those G's. And sometimes it would end up sounding like, you know, sneakers in a dryer, just coming back to it, or there'd be a big space in the music. But a simple way of just knowing the construction of your bass, it's tuned in fourths, means that there's the interval of a fourth in between each string. And if you see in your outline, we have kind of the 5-fret down rule and the octave rule. So I just kind of want to show you what those are. And if you look into your diagrams, I think, let's see what page. I think it's page 10 in mine. Yeah, it's page 10 in mine. It might be a different page in yours. But the 5-fret down rule is such that if I have a note, let's say G, I have G here, and I count up five. I have a 5-string, so this is a low B. So it's page 8. Okay, it's page 8. So if I have a G here, I count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I have the same note. Unison. Okay? The octave rule is 2 frets over 2 strings. A lot of you probably figured this out. But that's why when you start to tune, probably the first way a lot of you guys learned how to tune was playing, you know, A on the E string and then playing the next string open and hearing if they're the same. So I have G here, G G here. I hear that Chewbacca thing now. Yeah. G here, G here. My open string is G. I counted over. I found G here, G here, G here, G, G. I'm going to do that one more time. So G, octave, counted over, five. And go to this octave. I can even go up to this octave now. I have G here, and this G. And then I also have an open string G that's available to me. I also have a harmonic G on the 12th fret. And I also have even higher than that, not one octave up, right there at the 5th fret. So an easy way to practice that would be just setting a metronome and just playing one note for every bar. So it'd be, can you just kind of give me a click? So it'd be one, two, inspecting, one, two, three, open string, one, two, three, gotta find it, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, five fret, one, two, three, then the octave, two, three, four, five fret, two, three, four, open, two, three, four, harmonic, two, three, four, harmonic. So it kind of lets your eyes guide where those notes are. Because it's all about, if you're getting so caught up with a lick here or chord movement, then maybe you need to practice adjusting your eyes to be looking up. And the next step would then be to play on, let's say, one and three. Kind of the same thing. Two, three, and one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. And then the next step would be what? Every beat, right? Go ahead. Two, three. Right? You're just getting your eyes are kind of guiding. You're looking at the next note as one is playing, so you're figuring out where to go. And eventually those patterns of just the octave and that five note, that five fret rule just kind of congeal. In an optimal setting, you'd do that for every note, right? I find a great way to practice that is to go fourths. So you hit all 12. So you would start out with, you could start out with G again, and then what would be a fourth up from G? C. So go ahead and two, three, and C, two, C, two, C, then C, then C, then C. Right? And then what's a fourth up from C? F. Two, three, and one, two, three, four. I got more, buddy. No, I'm just joking. Thanks, dude. Eventually, if you go up in fourths, you're going to hit every key. Because above F is B flat, above B flat is E flat, A flat, D flat, F sharp, B, E, A, D, and eventually get back to G, right? So it takes you through every note in the key. One thing that I tell my students is try to do a key a month. That's good. There's 12 keys, right? There's 12 months in a year. So you could do it that way, or just take a key that you're consistently playing with. If it's the key of G, then get to know all your notes in the key of G. So that would be... Right, those are your chords. You have G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp, right? And it'll take you through all of those available options. So that was something that really has helped me and has helped a lot of my students too. Okay, so we have root notes. Why is the root note important? Yeah, it's the lowest thing ringing. Will could play, could you play like a middle string G major? So if I play, he plays a G major and I play a G. Sweet. We're playing a G chord. He's got B, D, and G ringing. If I play, go ahead and play it one more time. If I play E, well, it's some sort of E chord, right? It doesn't matter if he's playing a G, I'm playing an E, and so it creates an E minor 7 chord. Go ahead one more time. I play C, well, it's no longer a G chord. It's a G over C, or we could think about it as a C major 7, no 3. Make sense? Or a C major 9, no 3. Make sense? Is this all making sense? Okay. You want me to do it again? I'm going to do it again. All right. G. Super. E. E minor 7. C major 9, no 3. Now, you can get even more experimental, and we're going to talk about this in a second, but if I play a D, then that's... good. You were right where I wanted you to go. Good. You hear that tension? It's that suspension before that resolution. In classical terms, we would call that a cadential chord. It's a chord building somewhere, building to a cadence where you would land back on one. That's a G over D. Second version, we're going to talk about counterpoint and inversions in a little bit. But that will eventually want to resolve to a D chord. But as far as bass goes, I know I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. You can use those types of substitute root notes to build tension. If you guys were here last night, there was the last bridge of Here Is Love, and the chords are just going G, C, G, C, G, C. The last time we do it, I was substituting root notes all over the place. I was doing it in versions. I was doing kind of counter melodies to what I think Patrick was doing, either Patrick or Joel. And it's just building drama, building tension. So finally, when you get back to the last verse and you land on one, we've arrived, you know. Good. Okay. So root notes are important. Yes, they define the chord. So bass players, always double check with your band leader. Okay, is this the right chord? Because you could play something else and it'll be throwing off the rest of the band. Question? Sure. Yeah, and Here's Love. Yeah, yeah. So just G to C. So the bridge was a G, 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 C, 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 C. So bum, bum, bum. We're building. It's only two chords. So it's G and C. But because of the substitutes that I'm putting in there, whether it's an inversion, well, they're all inversions. He keeps that consistent G to C, and the bass player gets freedom. Yeah. It's not often we have all that freedom, do we? No. Just root notes. Just play the root notes. No. Is that helpful? Good. Okay. All right. So we have the root note. Let me just look in my notes here. Good. Let's look at fifths. What do fifths do? Does anyone know what I'm talking about when I'm saying these intervals? Fifths? Okay. For those of you who don't, just a quick thing. These intervals, as far as numbers go, and these numbers are different than these numbers. So if you see things in uppercase and lowercase Roman numerals, that's talking about the actual chord in the key, and each of those chords kind of has its own universe within itself. In a little bit, we're going to talk about modes, and those are attached to the Roman numerals. But when we're talking about scale degrees, that's where we see, you know, C7 flat 13. We see, we don't usually play that in church, but you would see that on a jazz chart. And all those numbers refer to the distance away from the root of the chord. So if I'm on G, I count over 5 notes in the key of G major. Here's my G. 1, root, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the 5th. Right? If I go to E, clear your palate. If I have E major, 5 notes away. The nice thing about the guitar, any sort of guitar instrument, is it's the same pattern and it'll always be in the same place. So G fifth, C fifth, D fifth, A fifth, E fifth, F fifth, F sharp fifth. It's always going to be in the same place. So you can rely on a fifth. The other beautiful thing about the fifth is it's not defining any sort of quality. So it could be a major chord or a minor chord. If I play this, play A major, well, works great. Play A minor. So root and fifth do not define any sort of quality. It can be augmented, it can be diminished, but for the sake of the 6 chords within a key, for right now, 1 through 6, excluding 7, the 5 fits in nicely and it's in the same spot. Okay? A lot of your fills can just deal with fifths. Before we get into thirds and defining chords, can we just do 1, 4, 6, 5 in G? So there's nothing except for the fifth, and that's G fifth, C fifth, E fifth, D fifth. And something that it should have occurred to me, you know, as a young bass player, but that note, fifth, the fifth above, it's the same note as below. So that's a D, the fifth of G, that's a D. So you can just get away with. That's how ping pong bass in country music came about. Right? The fifth below and the fifth above. So if you're not used to spreading your fingers over to that fifth and you want something simple, just as a simple fill note, right above the root. Always right above the root. Cool. Any questions on that? Yes. Yep. Sometimes. Yeah. Okay. Is there a particular finger that you leave out? Is it your fourth finger? Oh, really? Middle finger. Okay. That's not a bad thing. There's 3 main positions that I like to play in. First position, and they're super easy. First starts out with your first finger. Second starts out with your second finger. And fourth starts out with your fourth finger. They're kind of born out of the upright positions that bass players would play. But first position, like if I was to play G, just a G major triad, I'm going to reach for the third in a different spot than I would with another finger, or the fifth. So since we're talking about fifths right away, I would go. Okay. That would actually be the same note that I would get to from here. Second position, second finger. But I'm going to reach over with my pinky. Okay? Fourth position, I would put that fifth in a new spot. I wouldn't go. I would try to reach for it here. Can't quite see that. It's an open string. So let me play C, for example. Here's my C. I'm going to play the fifth here. It's the same note using my 5 fret rule as this. Where am I? Same note, but I would get to that fifth from there. And each of those different positions kind of have different capabilities, and you can do slurs and hammer-ons from certain positions better than you would others. But those are the 3 positions that I would I would look at. And we'll talk about more of that in a second. Is that helpful? Okay. Yes. Always. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. If you can, there is a third position, but it's mostly used for minor. But first, second, and fourth, I would use for major. Kind of get used to those, and then I would say play an entire song from one of those positions. So if I'm going to be playing, let me write down the chord progression I'm doing. Where'd that pen go? So second position. So I'm going to force myself. I'm going to put myself into a box and just see if I can get through. All right? 1, 2, 3, and. Now adding fifths. Second finger, I promise. So does that make sense? And then I would do the same thing from fourth position. Shut. Sorry. Yeah, that's right. Good. Is that helpful? Okay, good. So we have fifths, and then let's talk about thirds. What do thirds do now? It's in your packet. What's that? Yep, they can be used as passing tones, and so can fifths. Thirds define the chord. Okay, so if I play G here, there's a big difference between and, right? Higher up, I can play those at the same time. And we're going to talk about those when we get into chords. But, I'm sorry, what was your name? Ted. Like Ted said, you can use those thirds as passing notes, as filler notes. And so let me show you what those look like. From second position, here we are on G. And again, a third is 3 scale degrees up from the root. So 1, 2, 3. If it was G minor, it would be 1, 2, stays the same. 3. Can you play G major? If that third comes on a strong beat, we would call that an inversion that we'll talk about in a little bit. Excuse me. C. It's going to be in the same spot. What about D? Right? And then E minor. Third is in a different spot. It's not right next to the root on the string below. It's right to the side. Right? Okay. So let's do that same progression. And now I'm just going to use thirds. 1, 2, 3, 4. Does that make sense? Has a little bit of a different flavor. Because you're giving away the third, it makes it more, I don't know, more consonant, more happy sounding, right? The fifth has a little bit of ambiguity. You're delegating all of the quality giving to the other instrument, like a guitar or piano. And then you combine them. And now here, there's the idiom of the root, third, fifth thing that we hear in the blues a lot, right? Thank you. root, third, fifth, third. Right? You're giving everything away, right? Third and the fifth. You're out. You're basically just outlining the chord, right? Which, you know, during a guitar solo is helpful because you're not just plugging away on the root note. You're actually kind of laying a harmonic foundation for the solo to speak over, right? Good. Any questions on the triad at all? Let me quickly show you just another position I find helpful for minor chords. You can do it from second position. Let's say we're on A. There. You end up doing a lot of stretching. So I find for minor chords like A minor, it's helpful to put that third on the same string. Put it here. Root third. So remember my five fret rule. Same note. This C is the same as this C. Root, third, fifth, octave. All right. We're going to head into some scale territory, but no questions about that? Great. Okay. I'm going to take some water. All right, so the pentatonic scale. Pent means five. So we just talked about the triad. So how many notes are we adding? We're adding two notes, okay? The beauty about the pentatonic scales is for every chord in the key minus the seventh chord, they're going to work. It's going to be the same position. So how many major chords do I have in a key? Three, the one chord, four chord, and five chord, which is in a song in G, you see lots of G, C's, and D's, right? Those are the major chords, the foundation of Western music, okay? Then we have three minor chords, A minor, B minor, and E minor, two, three, and six, okay? So my position that I'm going to do for the G major pentatonic, so here's, I'm going to do it from first position, root, third, fifth. We're going to add the passing notes of 2 and 6. So count with me. 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, then octave. So there's only 5 different notes. I know the last one sounds like you're finishing, but it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then just the octave. So it's 5 different notes. Okay? So I'm going to take that same position I just did. And what's the fourth chord in the key of G? C. So I'm going to start on C and do the same exact position that I just did. Beautiful. Okay, what's the last chord, major chord? D. I'm going to start from D. And it all works. It's all legal. All legal notes. When we get into modes, we start to add two unique notes to that pentatonic scale. But for you just looking for, I need some new passing notes to play, I'm playing the same thing every week, or I need to find a new way of getting to E minor from G. This kind of will provide a pathway for you, okay? So let's do our chord progression, and I'm going to spend a little bit more time, so G, good, yep. 1, 2, 3, thank you. Okay, that's a lot of overplaying, but I want you to see that pathway. Does that make sense? Good. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's actually perfect fourth in the minor pentatonic. I didn't do minor pentatonics yet. Yeah. Let me come back to that just a second. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm up there all the time. Particularly because I like the slides and the glissandos. It makes your bass line seem more elastic to me. And I'm a rock player at heart. So I'm into those slides, you know, rather than doing, right? Same note, but this one has more attitude. One more has a little bit more grit. So when I started playing, kind of like I said before, I'd be playing, I'm trying notes and they're all working. And then I'm going to C and I'm like, oh no, I know one C and it's all the way down here. So that's why I would encourage you to find, oh, I actually have a C right here. So if I'm up here, I have my, I can get to a note safely. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. I think when it gets out of, if it forgets its role, and often a bass player and myself, we can tend to be, once we have the information, we can be really notey and forgetting like, oh yeah, I'm part drummer too. Because we kind of live between those two worlds, right? We're drummers, but we're also bass players or guitarists. And I would encourage you, because I was one of those young guys that as soon as the neck opened up to me, I was everywhere, right? And I you know, there's two types of players. We had, you know, there's, anyone familiar with the NAMM show? NAMM show? Oh, come on. NAMM show? Okay. A big expo, one held in Nashville, I think, and then one held in Southern California, where every major music company will come out and display their new gear for the year, right? And if you know someone, you can get in and see all the new gear for that year. And usually those companies will bring in guys who are endorsed by them, and they have amazing chops. So there's like the NAMM player chops, where like they're just going off. They're like a, you know, like a drill bit, and they must have been practicing in a, you know, a dark room, you know, deprived of water for just weeks and weeks to get these chops in. And it's amazing, but I don't do that week to week. And then you have the session player chops. And that's the thing that I had to learn. And that's more interesting, because here you got guys who walk into a studio, bring in their equipment, get a chart put in front of them that they've never seen before, and they play it down like they've been playing it for 20 years. And it's because of their phrasing. It's because of their simplicity. They know when to step out. They know, you know, kind of the idioms of different instruments and the different players that they're playing with. So they know, they can anticipate where one player is going to go based on who that person is. So I'd rather be that guy who gets, you know, if I was doing more session work, the guy who gets first called because of my simplicity in playing. And 90% of the time, that's what we're doing on Sunday mornings, right? We're trying to enhance the song. We're playing it, but at the same time, we're interpreting it by the phrasing that we do, by the register we're playing in, by the phrasing, and just by the vocabulary that we have. So, does that answer your question? Okay. Oh, cool. Well, I'll do it again. Let's do it again. Okay. Well, let's do it again. Let's do it in a different key. And let's actually do a song. Okay, let's do Let Your Kingdom Come. It should be in your packet. And I'll do a little bit of overplaying, but then I'll simplify, okay? Just because I want you to hear kind of the full range of where those scales can go. Intro twice into the verse. One, two, three, four. Oh, sorry. Sorry. 1, 2, 3, and... gauges are. May Jesus Christ be known forever. We ask not for ourselves, but for your renown. The cross has saved us so. Okay, a lot of overplaying, but at least you can kind of hear where those things naturally go. At the very beginning, I was only putting those little scale runs, and I would call those phrases rather than passing notes, because you're not guiding one chord to the next, you're just kind of putting in a little lick. Those little spots are great after they're singing. You know, worship music is all about letting people sing. So those sorts of phrases, unless they're, again, kind of contrapuntal or harmonizing the melody, would sound great coming after phrases. So, your glorious cause, O God, engages our hearts, space, right? So, and then, you know, what we'll do sometimes is we'll say, will you take all the spaces in verse one, or you fill them, and then I'll take all the fills on verse two. And then it sounds like we know what we're doing, right? Yeah. Yes. What's that? Uh-huh. Okay. No, it might be he's excited about that slide, so he's hitting it really hard. And so you end up getting kind of just a big sound. It also depends on the note that he's starting on. If I'm playing G and I start my slide from, I'm starting from a note that's not in the chord. So if you're going to start on a slide, kind of start from a spot that is part of the chord. If I'm going to go, let's say I'm going from this G up to this G. I can get there. Really, it doesn't have anything to do with. This hand? Oh. Pressure here? Sorry. Oh, thanks, Will. Gee whiz. Something that I like to do, I just call it the octave pass-off, is instead of me going from this G all the way up to this G, I spot the octave here, and it's that pass-off. And it sounds really cool because there's a huge hop of the interval. You're actually getting, if I was to play it not as a slide, it would sound like this. 5-1, right? It's a very strong movement in music. 5-1. But if I can add in a slide, or for you classical players, a glissando right before that. And that could come right away. Bon. Or. Could also do it from here. Right? Because the octave is right there too. So this has a lot of risk. Less risk, less, even less, right? So I just call that an octave pass off. And, you know, I had a bass teacher. His name's actually in the back of the packet. His name was Todd Johnson, and he hated slides. And I always threw them in because I was a rock player. And I just love that elasticity. But, you know, he's a jazz cat, and he didn't care for that much. Well, good. Let me talk about. Oh, where'd he go? Oh, bummer. I was going to miss out. All right. Yeah, this guy knows nothing. So I'm going to talk about the minor pentatonic. In the same way we're adding two notes to the major chord, we're adding again what two notes to our triad?
This is root, 3, 5, octave. We're adding two. And 6. And that gives us our major pentatonic. For minor, we have to start out with our triad, root, 3, five, an octave, yeah.
But we have a different set of intervals. We have, let's say we're on A. My three, as we talked about before, we can get there from here. It's kind of easy to think about as major, A major, A minor. But I want to encourage you to start out with first finger. So we have root, third, fifth, octave. Does anyone know? It's in the packet. We add four, and then we add seven. So you're just adding those three notes. So we have root, third, fourth, fifth, flat seventh, octave. Oh, yeah, feel free to take. There's three packets there. Yep. So if I have G, G major is here. One, two, three, five, six, octave. You can even just hear in the difference. Play G major. Right? We hear that scale a lot in Motown. Root, fifth, sixth, root, no, no, no. Sugar pie, honey, that's right. Okay. So minors, same idea, five notes. We have our triad, and we're adding fourth, which is right underneath, and a flat seventh, which is right underneath that. So go ahead and play just an A minor, yeah? Does that make sense? Cool. And the nice thing about that is it's going to work for 2, 3, and 6. So I can just scoot that up. So I'm answering your question now about the minor pentatonics. So it's a fourth and a flat seventh. Those are the two notes that we're adding to our minor pentatonic. Yes, sir. I am playing the fifth. Yeah. So 1, 3, 4, 5, flat seven, and then the octave. Yeah. So let's just go up the scale. Could we do two bars per? So just G, and then let's skip F sharp for now. One, two. So I'm going to go through each of these. I'm going to spend two bars on each. So be watching my hand position, because you'll notice that when it's a major chord, I'm going to get into my major pentatonic position. When it's minor, I'm going to get into my minor pentatonic position. Okay? One, two, here we go. A minor, B minor, C, D major, E minor, back to G. I purposefully was kind of moving up just so you could see all of those positions starting on the E string. Okay? Normally, I would go to, like, say, for a C chord. Rather than moving all the way up here, I would just go to this C and play that scale from there, but just visually. That's where I put it. Any questions? So this makes complete sense? Yes. All right. Great. Yes, it's always going to work. All those notes are legal. When we get into modes, we're going to add two more notes, and that's where it gets a little tricky. But that works. And a good way to practice it, same type of thing, I would go through each key. Again, a key a month to get you through 12 keys. Or again, take a song that you're working on. And even though that chord might not be in that song, notated at the top. When I first got started with bass and I started taking lessons, I would get handed a chart for, Your Grace is Enough by Chris Tomlin, right? And as far as I know, from what I remember, it has G, C, D, E minor. I think it's just only a four-chord song. But I would put at the top, I would write down all of those. I would put in the ones that weren't there, just so I knew, oh, if I needed to play an A, I can at least put that root note in as a passing note. But also get used to playing the pentatonic scales in each of those chords. Cool. How well do you know your keys? How's your key of A flat coming? So good. As bass players, we don't have capos, do we? No. So for us, it's super important to get those keys down that might be odd to us, but because a guitarist has a capo on, you know, they capo one in playing G. Well, that's the key of A flat for us, right? So it's important to note all your chords in the key. Do you all know the circle of fifths? Who's heard it said? Circle of fifths. Who knows what the circle of fifths is? Okay. It sounds like a hard concept. It's actually pretty simple. What key has no sharps and flats? C, right? When you sit at a piano and you want to sound like you're good, just play all the white notes, right? All right. Key of C, zero sharps, zero flats. Okay. Let's go up a fourth, which is the same as down a fifth. So it could be confusing. It's called the circle of fifths. You could also call it the circle of fours. Okay? What's a fourth up from C? F. F is going to have one flat. What's a fourth up from F? B flat's going to have two flats. What's a fourth up from B flat? E flat. How many do you think it's going to have? Three. Good. We'll talk about where those are in a second. Let's hit pause. Let's do sharps now. What's a fifth up from C? How many sharps? It's going to have one. Look, there it is. It said single sharp in the key. All right, let's go up a fifth from G. How many is it going to have? fifth up from D. Hey. Three sharps. That's all it is. And the beauty about being a guitarist is you can see the force right away. So here's my F, or I have a big old fat five string, so C, there's my low C, I go up a fourth, F, I go up a fourth, B flat, I go up a fourth, B flat, I go up a fourth, A flat, and I can keep going. I would have to go A flat, oh, where's that again? Boom, and I would keep going up like that. Sharps, here's C, let's go back to here, up a fifth, G, we talked about fifths before, right? G has one, I go up a fifth from G, D has two, go up a fifth from D, A, I can take that back down. Let me know if I'm going too fast. Okay. A has three, and I can keep going up. So at the beginning of a piece of music, if you can read music, you have the, the treble clef. We have something called the key signature, and if you saw... this, for example, it would tell you you're in the key of G because how many sharps are there? One. So it would tell you every time you encounter an F in the music, sharp it. That's what a key signature does. But we don't, how many of you guys are reading music with the key signature on it? No one? Okay. You are. Yes. Good. I'm trying to think of where I was going with that. Oh, so get to know your keys like this. I'm trying to remember, did I put that in the packet? Okay, yep, so page 2, under Mohs. We'll go back up to the Mohs real quick, but just skip down to three quarters of the way down. It says memorize the circle of fifths, and then I put a cute little acronym in there. Fat cats go down alleys eating bananas. That's the order of sharps. If you have one sharp, it's going to be F sharp, fat. If you're going to have two sharps, you're going to have fat cats, F sharp and C sharp. So the key of D, the key of G had F sharp. Key of D is going to have F sharp, yes, but we're going to add cats. Key of A is going to have three, fat cats go. Make sense? Okay, sure. All right. And then flats go the opposite way. So you could kind of think of that whole acronym flipped around, or I think of bead, GCF. Greatest common factor, I remember that as a kid, right? Bead. So if you have one flat, it's going to be B flat. If you have two flats, it's going to be B flat and E flat. If you have three flats, it's going to be B flat, E flat, and A flat. Okay. Is that here? Or is that pretty easy? Okay, pretty good. So if you look back in your packet, the one that says the base packet, you'll see a chart that has example, and I gave you, I'm sorry. Got left out. But you'll see example of the key of G, and it has just the key of G in there. Okay? So again, what I would do, just a simple application, is get a worship chart, put down all the ingredients at the top, all seven chords of the key. Okay? That will not only give you options, but it will give you chords to practice on that might be in the next song in the key of G. Okay? I know Let Your Kingdom Come is in G, and it has a three chord. It has a B minor that not a lot of songs have. So, good. How are we doing? Great? Good. All right, I'm going to grab some water. Oh, quick thing. Bottom of page one. Under the third heading, filling and passing through, you notice at the last two points, I gave you kind of a parentheses. I gave you one chord, four chord, five chord, flat seven. How many of you guys will play a song in the key of G and you have an F for some reason? We break a rule, right? It's kind of that bluesy, I had a teacher one time that called it a Beatles chord, right? Where it's supposed to be an F sharp, but to add some interest to the song, it's just a normal F. You could almost immediately hear it. I'm trying to think if we played a song that had one. We did in Praise God From Whom All Blessings Flow. How many of you heard a couple chords in that sounded unique and not to the key, right? Kind of goes out of the key a little bit to add interest. Any major chord in a key, your major pentatonic scale will work over. Any minor chord, I include in the parentheses a little minor five. So how many of you guys have played Come Praise and Glorify? Right? I would call that the key of B flat. Come Praise and Glorify. It goes to F minor. What's that doing in the key of B flat? In the key of B flat, F is supposed to be major. It's the five chord. But for the sake of that haunting kind of chordal melody, that five is transformed from an F major to an F minor. Well, the F minor pentatonic is going to work fine over that. Great. Cool. All right, we're about to get into modes. So, we good on pentatonics? Great. All right. I feel like modes have sort of been the secret knowledge, right, that only the Gandalfs of musicians know, right? I remember as a student going to a music shop, I'd see a bunch of books, music books, and there was this one that said, like, Modes and Scales Grimoire, right? And it had just, 100 pages of different modes. And granted, it was just cataloging. There's, different major and minor modes. There's substitute modes. There's the Hungarian mode, melodic minor. But when we get down to just the basic modes, they have weird names. They have Greek names. But just think of modes as key. It's the key you're in. So that's why I've been kind of heavily focusing on knowing your key. Because if you know all your notes in the key, then you know the modes. And we're just labeling what they're called. Does that make sense? Sort of? Okay. So a G major scale. This is the G major scale. But it's also called the Ionian mode. The Ionian mode. Okay? If I move to A, so I played from G to G. G started out there, went all the way up to G. I'm using all the ingredients of G. So if I start from A and end on A, but use all of the ingredients from the G major scale, that's a new mode. And it's one that's unique to that chord. So if I go from A, that's the Dorian mode. It's the Dorian mode. And again, it's just G major. It's only G major. I'm only using those ingredients. G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp, G. But I'm starting from A and ending on A. For a lot of your purposes, this would be a scale that you would play when there's an A minor chord ringing and you're in the key of G. Where it gets confusing is, let's say you're playing an A minor chord in the key of C. It would have a different mode associated with it because you're using a different set of ingredients, okay? But because we're in G, can we just do G to A minor? Cool. Two bars each. One, two, three, four. They almost sound like they're a part of the same family, huh? Right? Because I used an F sharp, and there was a little bit of dissonance, but it's still part of the key of G. So modes, again, just to restate it, are you're using the same ingredients of the key that you're in, but you're starting and ending on the different chords of the key. So G major, A minor. If I go from B and play to B, I'll come back to the pentatonic scales in a second. But if I go from B to B, and I'm using all of my ingredients from the key of G, then I'm going to play B. What's my next note going to be? C. What's next? D. What's next? E. Then F sharp. Then G. A. B. So I could... Give me just one moment.
I just keep writing the scale over and over again. There's the Ionian mode. Oh, did you write the same thing? I love it. A to A, using those same notes, is Dorian. B to B, Phrygian. C to C, Lydian. D to D, mix. E to E, Aeolian. F sharp to F sharp, Locrian. Yeah, back in the day, you'd get burned at the stake for using that scale. It's true. You weren't allowed to.
There's so much dissonance in it. What's that? Yeah, scary stuff. The Locrian mode, you weren't Gregorian chant, kind of the basis of harmony and stacking voices. They weren't allowed. They would always have to substitute a note, which is why Gregorian chant sounds so hollow sounding. It's kind of what we would associate, you know, with a bunch of guys in hoods walking around, right? They weren't allowed to include F sharp starting there and ending there. So they would leave that out. Yeah. A lot of Dorian. And Mixolydian, actually. They liked that that 6th degree. Yeah. Good. So does that sort of make sense? I'm going to try to explain it from two other angles. Okay? So that's looking at by key. So if you see in your notes, angles of understanding, I went to the last one first. Get to know the 7 notes of the key. So if I'm in the key of G, I get to know my 7 notes. G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp, G. And then I figure out where all of those are on my neck. And I play from each of those scale degrees, starting on 2, A. Starting from 3. From 4, from the C chord. From 5. 6. And then 7. Okay? And that gets you all the way to the top. Okay? Two other angles. The first one is the pentatonic scale. Good. So now turn back to that page 6, I think it's page 6 in your packets, where it says example key of G, and it lists all the Roman numerals going down. First column just gives you exactly what's written up there. G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp, G. The second column gives you the modal notes. Those are the notes that you add to the pentatonic scale to make it modal. Okay? So if I play G major pentatonic, right? It's great. It's going to work every time. There's not a single illegal note in that thing. If I add a 4th and a major 7, it's going to turn it and add it to that pentatonic scale. It's going to turn it into Ionian mode, or just a major scale. So here's my pentatonic. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, major 7, and then back at 1. Let me play the pentatonic again. Adding my 2 new notes. There, there, and I've just created a mode. Just created the G major scale based on those 2 modal notes. Okay? So if for you, you want to take the angle of getting to know the key and then figuring out the positions of where all those notes are, good. All the power to you. Eventually, you'll get to the point where all of these angles kind of collide and come together. But then the other angle for me was pentatonic. I was doing lots of pentatonic scales, runs over and over again. And I just wanted to add, you know, what are the other notes that I'm missing out? Because I know that there's 7 notes in a scale. I'm leaving out 2. I'm only playing the pentatonic. And some of those runs just sound the same, right? So I'm just adding 2 notes. So then let's look at the 2 chord, A minor. I'm adding a 2nd and a 6th. So here's A minor pentatonic. It's a great scale, okay? I'm going to add a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, flat 7, then octave. It added like a shadow right to the chord. It's not just straight up standard. It gave it kind of a new light. Can we jam on, G to A minor, 2 each? 1, 2, 3, 4. Pentatonic first. Safe and Vanilla. Ionian. Kind of cool, huh? Right? And then not only do those work as little phrases and little fills, those actually become the pathway to a chord. So if I'm here on G and I'm trying to get to C, yes, I can use my pentatonic scale to get there, right? But if I know that I have a major 7, because I know my major scale and I know it's Ionian and I'm in the key of G, I can add. Now I just got three notes to get to C. Okay, there's, do you guys know Now Why the Sphere? And I believe, can we do it from the bridge? So, oh, it's in B. Sweet the sound. The chord progression is going E, B over D sharp, E. How sweet the sound of sound. How sweet. Sound of saving grace, Christ died for me. I just want you to get that sound. How sweet the sound of saving grace. How sweet the sound of saving grace, Christ died for me. Right? Okay. So what I do is I incorporate root note E. I'm going to go up to the third and back. So I'll go, how sweet the sound of, and then I do the B over D sharp, right? It's written in the chart. And it's a B over D sharp, so I'm going to hit B because it's part of the chord. And then back to E. Actually, I do my low E. So at the very basic, let's just do those two chords. 1, 2, 3, 4. Keep going. Sorry, 1, 2, 3, and my bad. So it's just E to G, E, B over D sharp, back to E. Now, coming back, to walk back down to E, I include sweet the sound of saving grace. How sweet the sound of saving grace. Christ died for me. Now I get those notes because I know there's my E, but I'm in the key of B, and I know my B major scale. So even though I'm on a different chord, I can get those notes because if it's in G major, or I'm sorry, if it's in B major, it's going to be available in any other chord in the key because I'm still using the ingredients of the key that I'm in. Is that clear? So any key that you're in, all those notes are legal is basically the concept. Good. So there's modes. We just have a few minutes, and I get asked a lot about, I'm sorry, I didn't get to cover everything. I want to cover chords really quick because I find those immediately applicable in lots of song settings. I have two types. I have the open chords and closed chords. Open chords, I kind of define as there's a big open space in between the intervals. So if any of you have the recording of All I Have is Christ from The Gathering, the intro is, once was lost, right? Okay. And what I'm doing is I'm just taking the chords from the intro, which is, you have this in your song packet. all I have is Christ at the top. A, B minor, D over G sharp, G to D. So I find, I know I'm going up high, but this is the only, this is, besides with the low B, this is the only spot where I get that span of intervals. I have the root, I'm playing the root note. And then the third, just an octave up, and we call that a tenth. Because 3 plus 7 is 10. It's all about 7. Okay? So the nice thing is the positions, again, are the same. Any sort of major chord will be, let's say I play G, for example. It's always one fret over on the high string. How many of you guys know who Abe Laboriel is? Oh, okay. As soon as you get on a computer, YouTube, Abe Laboriel. Just a legend. His son, Abe Laboriel Jr., plays with Paul McCartney, plays drums with Paul McCartney. Just a monster player. And I see him, he's like a classical guitar player starting out, right? And then he brought it to bass. And so he's way into like strumming, something that I don't do a ton of, but he gets these really nice voicings. And he has a big hand stretch, and I can't do a lot of the things he can, but I can do thirds. So there's G major, G minor. The third is only half step away. So if I'm playing A, and I go to B, it's going to look like that. It's not going to be B minor is right there. They're right on top of each other. Then G major, D major. Play that again. A major, B minor, D over G sharp, G, down to D. Passing. That makes sense. So I have the thirds available to me. Here I also have a ninth, which is a second. So what's the second of A? A, B. But what's 2 plus 7? 9. So it's called a ninth. And often, two sound great resolving up to the third. Sorry. Good. And then that one that I'm going up top is a fourth or an 11th. And those are great. How many of you guys have seen a D-sus chord? D-sus or G-sus? A sus means that you're suspending the third. You're not playing the third. What's actually being played is the fourth above it. So if I was given a D-sus chord, I would not play. I'm giving away the third. I want to suspend that third. Can you play a D sus to a G? A D? La, la. Right? You hear it resolve? So it's the fourth. Then I'll play it with you. Now go ahead and play it the fourth. We're disagreeing, right? Unless we're doing an effect. Some sort of effect where we want to kind of cluster a bunch of notes together. I would get a piano player and another guitar player in on it. But generally, if I have a sus chord and I'm going to end up doing these bass chords, I'm going to be playing kind of the appropriate note. So I'm not going to play the third. I'm going to play the fourth. And if you got long fingers, you could even get up to a high fifth, which I do on Shine Into Our Night, if you heard today. I do... which is just an octave plus that fifth. Okay? So, I know we're running out of time. I'm sorry, Daryl. Last thing, closed chords. Closed chords would be when the notes are pretty close to each other. You're not really taking care of the bass anymore. Either someone else is covering it or there's purposefully no bass in your mix. So, for the intro of My Soul Arise, if you just look in your packet real quick, I'll only be one more minute. The intro is C minor for two bars, A flat major to F minor. So I'm playing root and third, root and fifth, root and third. Would you play it with me? One, two, three, here we go. They could be thirds, they could be fifths. Remember, all those same notes, thirds and fifths, they're going to be in the same spot as if they were down here. You're just putting them into a higher register. And being so close together, they sound fine once you play, if you play them together. The further down you get down here, the more muddy it gets. Like if I try to play C minor here, too many overtones ringing. You're not able to hear the clarity. Kind of sounds like mush. So I generally keep those closed chords kind of delegated to the D and G string and up a little bit higher. We made it. So I'm hoping to talk more about groove with Dave tomorrow, and we'll be jamming, and we'll be here as well. So Enfield is lean tonight, so hopefully everything I said, I'll do it. So thanks so much for coming. And again, it's so fun to see a lot of familiar faces. And can we close in prayer real quick? Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thanks for this time that you've given us. Thanks for all of these men and women, their faithfulness to their churches. Pray that they'd be able to use even a small part of today in their churches to edify them. And just give us a great rest of our conference. In your name we pray. Amen.
You've been listening to a seminar by Ryan Fogelsong entitled Advanced Bass Guitar, Craft and Creativity, recorded at the Worship God West 2014 conference. For more information on Worship God conferences and Sovereign Grace Ministries, please visit our website at www.sovereigngraceministries.org.